Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
It's all about the macro productions.
What does the goddamn line say, Tony?
Please do not use gendered language.
Then what? I'll be arrested, put in airport jail.
Well, you're going completely sideways, man.
It's a big club, and you ain't in it.
How dare you?
Mr. Speaker, the President of the United States.
I'm Chris Hansen with Dave on NBC.
Jack Mary's Tack Theratrix.
Hi, I'm Spartacus.
Keith Jackson, Sacramento, he, him.
Steven Seagal.
Sex offender guy.
I'm Keith Morris.
This is Muammar Gaddafi.
I'm Rick James, bitch.
Sorting through the lies.
The hijacker's passport was found blocks from the World Trade Center crash site, if you can believe that.
We cannot track $2.3 trillion in transactions.
And uncovering the centuries-long plan for world domination.
Learning about Cuba, having some food.
Let's talk about Chinese people.
Have you ever been in a Turkish prison?
I have
a
I
have sent six of my Libyan missiles to blow up the Sears hardware department.
Nothing could be more fun than jumping off a cliff to German bisexuals.
Oh, you English are so superior, aren't you?
Thank you, comrade.
And now, macroaggressions.
That's what assholes call it.
With your host.
Buddy, I don't know who you are, but you're about to get chlamydia.
Charlie Robinson.
Hey, Whitey, where's your hat?
You want to drop the blame on Charlie and say it's all Charlie's fault.
He was a retard.
I get some goddamn diuretic.
Welcome to Macroaggressions. I'm your host, Charlie Robinson. If you're watching us on Rumble, Band.video, Vigilante TV, or you're listening wherever podcasts are served, thank you so much for your amazing and continued support. We're now over 550 episodes, a little over 5 years, as we rush towards 10 million downloads. Thank you all for downloading the show. I appreciate it very much. Have you rated the show? I hope you'll give us 5 stars if you think we've earned it. We do our best over here. We appreciate our sponsors. They help to make this show go. My Patriot Supply has a landing page specifically for us. It's easy. Just go to preparewithmacroaggressions.com, and from there, the discounts will sort of be incorporated in, and they have sales running all the time. If you don't have storable food, you need it. It's easy to do. You can just buy it, or you can wrap this up in 5 minutes, but you've got to have it. You just have to. It's one of those things. It lasts for 25 years, so you can look at it a variety of ways, as a safety net, as an investment, as just in case of, there's a lot going on these days, and you just want to have that just in case. So take a look, go over there and see what you think. They've got survival gear, they have camping gear, they have solar panels. There's a lot going on over there at My Patriot Supply. And look, I hope you don't need any of this. I really do. I hope none of us do. And if you're somebody that thinks you need storable food, but you're not interested in going this route, that's fine too. Go to Costco and buy a bunch of rice and beans and things like that. But do something. Be proactive in this regard, because you're going to wish you could go back to this time when it was relatively normal and you could take care of all the things that you knew you should have done, but you didn't do because you thought you had more time. So I'll tell you what, when you've got storable food that'll last you 25 years, shaves a bit of that that issue off, right? You can be early by 2 years and it's still going to be okay. So go to preparewithmacroaggressions.com. The link is down in the notes below. The link is also at my website, macroaggressions.io. You can just get yourself sorted out, or take care of somebody in your family who may be out of state, buy them some storable food and have it drop shipped to them. So preparewithmacroaggressions.com. Also, our good friend Tony Arterburn at Wise Wolf Gold and Silver has a variety of programs available for you. If you have an IRA or a 401k and you're a little bit concerned that you don't want all of your eggs in the stock market or bond market basket, that's reasonable to have those issues and to think maybe I should do something else with it. If you want to convert it into physical gold and silver, you can do that. Tony can do that. You have to have the right license. You have to know exactly what you're doing. But Tony has done that for a ton of Macro Aggressions listeners. You can go to macroaggressions.gold and check it out. See what he's working on. You can message him if you have questions about it. He'll get back to you. If you want to become a part of the Wolf Pack, which is an auto buy program for gold and silver, you should. I've been a member now for 2 years since they started. You get a little box delivered to your house every month with silver and gold, little pieces of gold, whatever. The best bang for your buck. Tony and his team put it together. They try and find the best value that they've got. And they've now got thousands of members that are participating in this. It is the best move you'll make. You can dollar cost average into gold and silver at a reasonable price every month. Set it and forget it. You don't even have to worry about it. Go to macroaggressions.gold. Take a look for yourself. See what you think. Talk to Tony Arterburn if you need to for your IRA and 401k. There are solutions. You just need to know about it. So check it out. All right. Well, let's talk about Israel. Let's talk about the Greater Israel Project. This is something that is extremely relevant these days. We've been sort of tiptoeing around the edges of it, I suppose, in the sense that I don't think I've done like a full breakdown of Israel on this show. I've talked about it plenty, of course, and if you're writing books about control structures, you know, like I did, you're going to come up against the influence of Israel. It's very real. It is only theoretical in the sense that they would like you to pretend that it doesn't exist. This influence, this Jewish influence, and the Israeli influence, and we're going to have to define some terms here because this is a landmine topic, but I don't mind. I don't mind talking about it. You can be Israeli. You can be Jewish. You can be a Zionist. You can be all three of them at the same time. You can also be Jewish who's not a Zionist. And you could be an Israeli Jew who is apoplectic about what your government is doing on your behalf. Much as those in the same way that we in America, you know, we're not involved in what our government does. We have no, we're not cheerleading this. And if there are segments inside America who are strongly opposed to the actions of their government, it stands to reason that there are segments inside of Israel who are strongly opposed to the actions of their government as well. So I don't want to make any sort of broad generalizations that everybody in Israel believes a certain way, because we know that that's not true. There is a majority feeling, though. You definitely would be in the minority if you were in Israel with a massive problem about what your government is doing to the Palestinians or to the Iranians or to any of your neighbors, right? You certainly would want to keep that under wraps. That's not something that is, there's not a huge appetite for that, at least from the Israeli government. So, you know, we'll just wade into this. I want to talk about Greater Israel. I want to talk about how Israel came into being, the Balfour Declaration. It's one of these topics that maybe you've heard of, but we'll go into a little bit more detail. We'll talk about the modern state of Israel coming into existence in 1948. We'll talk about how it was designed to be a rogue state from the beginning, the influence of the British, the influence of the British Zionists, the Rothschild factions. And we'll wrap up with a more detailed explanation about exactly what Greater Israel Project is and what they're looking for and what their end goal is. So it just kind of takes me back to a statement that David Icke has made plenty of times. Know the outcome and you'll see the journey, right? If you know where they're trying to go, then you can work backwards and figure out, well, how would they get there? How do you go from where we are now to where they want to be, and just work it out? And, you know, if you know about the Greater Israel Project, that is, know the outcome and you'll see the journey, right? The outcome is the Greater Israel Project, right? So what is the journey? Well, the journey is, how does Israel get itself to a place where they have put the Greater Israel Project into being. It will require a remaking of the Middle East, but you know, if Israel has it their way, the United States Empire will be the ones in charge of remaking it, right? We'll do all the dirty work for them. That's how they see it. And I think that everything makes sense. The Israelis' position on their behavior towards the Palestinians, their behavior towards the Lebanese, you know, anyone, Syrians, anyone in that general region, the attitude of Israel towards its neighbors makes sense only when you understand that Greater Israel is the goal. Okay. And otherwise it'll feel a bit disjointed. It'll feel like Israel is just fighting or convincing America to fight, you know, the seven countries in 5 years, that General Wesley Clark, NATO Supreme Allied Commander, talked about on Amy Goodman's show, Democracy Now!, back in 2007, when he talked about, you know, I got this paper from upstairs and it says how we're going to take out seven countries in 5 years, finishing off with Iran. This is Israel's foreign policy. It's being implemented by the American Empire. But this is not America's foreign policy. I mean, it becomes our foreign policy once we enact it, of course. I mean, we own it at that point. But the idea for it, the concept behind seven countries in 5 years, that's not America. That's Israel. Now, America sees the benefits in this, right? They say, well, we'll get the oil and gas as well, and we'll do all the things that we do. But if you look at cui bono, who benefits? It's Israel. I mean, the American Empire didn't benefit from wars in Afghanistan and wars in Iraq and bombing of Libya and bombing Somalia and bombing Sudan and all of these countries that we bombed. It doesn't do anything for the American people. It doesn't make, oh, you know, we got to get them there before they get us here. That's nonsense. That's fantasy. That's not happening. That is called inventing the justification to go into foreign wars and say, well, we've got to, you know, we've got to get them first. And we've seen this a lot with like the Israel versus Iran situation. It's like, well, we're doing a preemptive attack to defend ourselves. It's like, wait, what? You're defending yourself by attacking and then throwing your hands up and saying, why won't we have peace? Why won't everybody have peace? Oh, I don't know. Maybe because you're launching missile strikes on countries and then, you know, clutching your pearls and claiming, oh, they're hitting us back. No, this is part of a much bigger agenda. And, you know, this isn't conspiracy theory, right? There's some out there that might say, well, you know, you guys are talking about Greater Israel Project. That's theoretical. That's something that has been talked about in the past, but it's just talk. And you guys are trying to make something out of nothing. No. I will stop anybody in their tracks right now who is going down that line of thinking. This is not conspiracy theory. This is conspiracy analysis. Okay. At its purest, in its purest form. The IDF, the Israeli Defense Force, the military for Israel, they wear uniforms, right? Their soldiers wear uniforms, just like every costumes, really. When you're an Israeli soldier, it's a costume because you're pretending to be a tough guy. When you're a Russian wearing Russian soldier wearing a uniform, that's a different story. But the Israelis are LARPing. And, but on the arm patch, on the shoulder patch, on the side of their, on the side of their actual uniform, there is a patch that is a map of the Greater Israel Project. Okay. So any sort of discussion, if you want to have this conversation with friends and family members that are near you and they you mention Greater Israel and they try to come back at you with, oh, that's just a conspiracy theory. Well, if it's a conspiracy theory, why do they have arm patches with the map of the Greater Israel Project? I mean, that's the follow-up question. And the answer is because it isn't theory, it's actually happening. Okay. And we must first understand the origins of Israel and how they stole the land from the people through the Balfour Declaration and the Rothschilds' influence and the crown, the British crown, and how all of that came together to create, as David Icke says, the fiefdom of the Rothschilds. Okay. Israel was created for a variety of reasons. It is the fiefdom of the Rothschilds. It is a rogue state that is used to carry out some of the most heinous acts happening on the planet. It is a clearinghouse for pedophiles and psychopaths. They are not prosecuted in Israel. Okay. The influence that Israel uses comes from their ability to blackmail powerful people. And this has always been used as an aircraft. I mean, the land that is known as Israel, the way the American Empire views this, as an aircraft, a permanent aircraft carrier in the Middle East for them to launch attacks from. What's interesting, though, is that when the United States gets into these exploratory wars in Afghanistan and Iraq and gets bogged down and puts bases in Syria and has problems with people in Libya and elsewhere in the Horn of Africa, you know who doesn't help join the fight? The Israelis. They never send any troops. The South Koreans do. The South Koreans send troops. Whenever we, the American Empire, not me, but whenever the American Empire asks the South Koreans, we need troops for whatever, Afghanistan, Iraq, South Koreans sends their troops. We ask Israel for their troops, it's crickets. They want you to die for them, but they're not willing to step up and help the Americans in any way. This notion that has this, you want to talk about conspiracy theory? Here's the theory: that Israel is our greatest ally. That is provably false. Israel is an enemy of the United States, but we're not allowed to say it because the people that have the big microphones in front of their face, they're compromised and controlled by Israel. So they can't say it lest they wind up with a horse's head in their bed. You know what I mean? So let's talk a little bit about the Balfour Declaration. This is something that came about in 1917. You know, it's 100 years ago. It's tempting to be sort of like, oh, I don't know, like dismissive or tune out when you start talking about something that happened that long ago. But it's very important, and I'll try and make it as interesting as possible. But a letter was written by Lord Balfour, Foreign Secretary. And he wrote this to Lionel Walter Rothschilds, 117-word letter, very ambiguous. But in that letter, it is Lord Balfour is asking, is telling Rothschild that we want a home for the Jewish people in Palestine. Okay. And this was pushed by the Zionists, and Rothschild was head of the English Zionist Federation. So this is a Zionist operation. Now, again, back to defining terms. You can be Jewish and be a Zionist. You can be Jewish and not a Zionist. You can be a non-Jew and be a Zionist. Zionism is a political designation. It's not a religion. It's are you a Democrat or Republican, you know, in America, to put it in sort of perspective? It's like, how dare you? You called me a Democrat. How dare you insult my Christian roots? It's like, nobody's talking about Christianity. We're just saying, what political party are you in? Are you a Democrat or Republican? Are you a Zionist? Whatever. So when you hear people talking about, you know, being critical of the Zionists, and then Jewish people go, oh, I can't believe how anti-Semitic they are. No. You need to define your own terms. You need to understand what Zionism is and what it isn't. It isn't religious. I mean, it's a bloodthirsty and psychotic ideology that throws everybody under the bus. Okay. But it's not religion based. And Joe Biden said it, you know, you don't have to be a Jew to be a Zionist. I'm a Zionist and proud of it. Yeah. And you're also a pedophile, which means that you would be welcomed in Israel, where they harbor Jews across the world who are who are wanted for pedophilia, they harbor them in Israel and give them safe haven. So, I mean, if you're like, what kind of country is Israel? Well, it's that kind of country, just so you know. And it's and its history is in dispute. Okay. And the same people who were involved in the creation of the state of Israel are the same people that were blowing up the King David Hotel and creating the concept of international terrorism. Okay. So back when the Balfour Declaration was being sent and was going through the motions, this is at the tail end of it's during World War One. Okay. So you've got World War One. World War One is going to wrap up. They're going to slap these massive sanctions on Germany. They're basically cripple Germany for its role in World War One. And while this was going on, there's negotiations that are happening that say, hey, we want this land. You know, this Palestinian land, down there kind of on the Mediterranean, like we want it for the Jewish people. Okay. And at the time there were 700,000 Arabs living in Palestine. So if you talk to people who are, you know, if you talk to Jews who went through like synagogue, Sunday school and things like that, when you ask them about the history of Palestine, they will tell you it was unoccupied. That the Jews just showed up and it was like vacant land. It's not true. There were 750,000 people there in, you know, 100 years ago, with populations what they were 100 years ago too. So this would be a much bigger number had it been in modern times. So this idea that it's like it was empty land and that we just showed up and took it because no one was there, that's a lie. It's not only not true, it's an intentional lie to make you think that the people who took the land were not the bad guys. They're the bad guys. When you come in and steal the land. Oh, by the way, the American Empire, America, we stole a bunch of land too. I mean, it's probably part of the reason why the American Empire and the Zionists have so much in common, because there is not a line that they won't cross. When it comes to taking other people's stuff or murdering them or making an example of them, the American Empire and the Zionists are lockstep. Okay. But there were 700,000 Palestinians when they sent the declaration, but they had ideas on how to remove them from the land, if not the planet entirely, which they eventually got around to. But in this Balfour Declaration, it's important to realize there was no mention of a state for the Jewish people, just a home. Okay. When I say this is an ambiguous document that was very short, that's what I'm talking about. Lawyers would tear it apart, right? They would have a field day with it. There's no time frame in the document. You're like, a home for the Jewish people, when? Today? Tomorrow? Next week? 10 years from now? 100 years? When are we? What are we talking? That was left out. There's no explanation of how this would be accomplished. It's just that it would be accomplished. There's no maps. There's no definition of what land we're talking about here. The Arab leaders voted against it. And frankly, Britain had already promised this land to another party, to the Sharif of Mecca after the defeat of the Ottoman Turks, World War One. There was, the land's already spoken for. So this idea that Lord Balfour is going to go, oh yeah, yeah, that land over there, we want it and we want it for the Jewish people. It's like, well, first of all, there's Arabs there. And second of all, we promised it to the Saudis. Or, well, they weren't technically the Saudis at this point, but you know what I mean. The Sharif of Mecca is. So anyway, this doesn't get resolved in the aftermath of World War One. It still takes three more decades almost, before it's parceled out and Israel is created, right? So in 1948, we've got World War II coming to an end in 1945. By the way, during World War II, there was a there's a lot of lies about World War II. I mean, I feel like we'd have to do not just an entire show on it, but like a series on the lies of World War II. One of the lies is that Hitler was bloodthirsty and he was looking to liquidate all these Jews just as soon as he possibly could. That's not true. He was looking to move them out of Germany for sure. And there were other options. Palestine was not the first choice. Madagascar was on the table, but first of all, there were people there, not that that ever really mattered to them, but they said that there was no ancestral connection to the land. That they felt that the Jews did. I mean, I don't know if anybody's magic book telling them that Madagascar is the promised land. And maybe it is, but I've never seen that. So, though it was a compelling offer and an interesting one, I'm sure the people of Madagascar would have had some problems with it, and they would have been locked up in concentration camps, if not murdered outright. But it didn't happen, right? So they were trying to relocate people, and Hitler was sending people out all the time as well. And where they were going, well, they wound up in Palestine because they were told this is land that was promised to them and that they're just going to set up shop there. And the Balfour Declaration is going to kick in and we're going to have, we're just going to have ourselves a home for the Jewish people, not a state, just a home. So in 1948, it officially became Israel and the terrorism factory of the world was born. Menachem Begin. Heard that name before? He was the prime minister of Israel from 1977 to 1983. It's the founder of the Likud party. You know, the Likud party is Benjamin Netanyahu's party. And Menachem Begin was at one point, he was involved in the bombing of the King David Hotel. He was involved in the 1948 Palestinian War. He's a Russian. You know, I mean, back then, nobody was really from Israel. They're all from Russia or, you know, Eastern Europe, Poland, you know, like Netanyahu. You know, Netanyahu's not from Israel, right? He's Polish. Milikowski is his name. He's a name changer. He's a crypto Jew. He's a make-believe guy. Talk about a wolf in sheep's clothing. That's Benjamin Netanyahu. By the way, despised in his own home country, an internationally wanted war criminal he and his wife should be locked up. But, you know, we'll get to that. But when Menachem Begin was at one time, he was called a terrorist by somebody. I don't know if it was a reporter. Some interaction that he was having with someone. It wasn't one-sided. He was called a terrorist, and he snapped back at them, "No, I am the godfather of international terrorism. So get it straight." So this idea that when I say that the terrorism factory of the world was born, they're proud of that. That's not me slapping some pejorative term on what Israel was. They brag about it. Menachem Begin clarified he's not just a terrorist. He's the godfather of international terrorism. And he was the prime minister of Israel. Okay? So you have to understand this is the mentality of the people who are occupying high positions of power inside of Israel. Bloodthirsty psychopaths. Okay? So, and look at Netanyahu. Take a look at that guy. That guy should be studied for years. Talk about sociopathy in right there on in front of a bank of microphones all the time. So after they took possession in 1948, their state of Israel was born. They immediately started murdering Arabs, like immediately. And stealing their land. Then they got to work on stealing nuclear technology. Okay. Have you heard of the Dimona nuclear power plant? Well, there is a belief, and I think that they're probably right. If you want to stack up all the reasons why JFK was killed, there's plenty of them, right? It wasn't just that there was one person, you know, you could have brought in a dozen suspects and ask them why they wanted JFK dead, and they would all have different reasons for it. But the registering AIPAC as a foreign agent and the and JFK not playing ball with the nuclear secrets and nuclear technology and any sort of help with Dimona nuclear power plant more than likely contributed to his death. Now it makes for a better story in the U.S. when you say Cuban nationalists or people tied to Cuban nationalists, you know, were involved in shooting him, because you don't know any Cubans. You know, they can't say, oh, he was whacked by Israel. Because you'd say, well, but isn't Israel our greatest ally? Don't we have all these relationships with them? You go, but they murdered our president and we're supposed to like look the other way. No, you're supposed to blame it on Cuba. You're supposed to blame it on a lone gunman who is acting at the behest of Cuba, though none of that stuff makes any sense, of course. Israel has now, flash forward from JFK to where we are today, and how's their nuclear program? Well, it's massive and secret, okay? Israel's had many nukes, but they refused to sign any nuclear treaties or allow inspectors to visit. It's unheard of behavior. But it's much in the same way that they flout international law at the UN, where they refuse accountability for literally everything and anything that they're involved in. So what happened was, I'd mentioned that the group, Menachem Begin and his group behind the bombing of the King David Hotel, this was a Zionist paramilitary group called Irgun, I-R-G-U-N, Irgun. And they were responsible for that bombing. It killed 91 people. It injured 46 others. And it sent a message to the world that Israel was not fucking around. Okay. And that they were willing to do things that were unthinkable. So what does it look like these days? In the aftermath of that, you've had what? 80 years now of the state of Israel existing. Well, what does it look like? Well, they're running an apartheid state. You know, they have some people in open air concentration camps, the Palestinians, that they are made to go through elaborate security. They live in an open air prison. Let me rephrase that. The ones who are still alive, who haven't been bombed to smithereens over the last 18 months, are living in an open-air prison. The rest of the people who were there are all dead, and they're buried under the rubble. They're running an apartheid state. Okay, now this shouldn't be surprising, because they've had a long partnership with South Africa. And when we talk about nukes and Israel, the assumption is, well, they got them from the United States. Well, maybe they did, maybe they didn't. I'm sure they stole the technology. I'm sure they got some of the parts, and I'm sure they got some components that they needed from America. But they wouldn't have built the bombs that they built without South Africa. Okay, that relationship is very solid. They were involved in something known as the Vela incident. It's a U.S. satellite picked up a double flash in the Indian Ocean between South Africa and Antarctica. There's a bit of space there. And it was showing, this was in 1979. It was showing a nuclear test. What they caught on the satellite was a nuclear test that was taking place in a place that was very remote. Like if you left Cape Town heading towards Antarctica and you got about halfway there, that's where these tests were done. No one would normally see it except satellites picked it up. So this is something that was codenamed Operation Phoenix. This is a Israeli and South African project. They work together to share nuclear technology. So what are they going to do with this nuclear technology that the Israelis have? I mean, it's one thing when nukes are in the hands of anybody, right? And there is also, by the way, we might have to cover this another time, there is a line of thinking that maybe nuclear bombs aren't even real. Maybe they're not. There certainly is a lot of work being put in to try and get them. That seems very real to me. Are they the end all be all? I don't know. I don't know if nuclear technology is the greatest deterrent that you can have, because you could never really use it. I think the Israelis will use it. I think they're psycho enough to do it. I'll tell you what, and it's not just my opinion that I think the Israelis would use it. Have you heard of the Samson option? It's not my concept. It's the Israelis. The Samson option is this. If and they and there's books been written about this, and there's been discussion about it. This is only theory for those who don't choose to check it out. But it's very real. The Samson option is this. If Israel is on the losing end of an ass beating, their strategy is to launch all their nukes and blow up the world. So, you know, putting the cunt in country once again, the Israelis. It's not enough to just get your ass kicked and go home and lick your wounds. No, you have to take everybody else out with you. That's the Samson option. That's the Israelis. That's their mentality. That's why when they talk about Iran can never have a nuclear missile because they would be in the hands of the wrong people. I got news for you. It's already in the hands of the wrong people. They're the Israelis. They're the most dangerous people I've ever seen. Okay? They take the American empire to levels that you can't even comprehend. And the American empire dropped 2 bombs on Japan. Okay, so if they're willing to do it, and the American Empire still has lines, you know, in the sand that they won't cross, the Israelis do not have that sort of hesitation. Modern Israel is a rogue state. It is number 10 in arms sales throughout the world. It is has the, in my opinion, I think, the top surveillance technology. You'd probably, you know, if we were having a contest here, you'd probably have to talk to China about what they have, though they wouldn't tell you. God knows what DARPA is creating. So America would be on that list too. But surveillance technology, Israelis are really good at that. And Unit 8200, their cyber terrorism unit, they're some of the best in the world, right? So there's, and that's, I think, also what makes them so dangerous. It's one thing if you've got a hair trigger and you want to launch bombs that'll take out the rest of the world. It's another thing if you can actually do it. The Israelis are extremely smart, okay? They're capable. That's what makes them dangerous. If they were just, you know, wearing flip-flops and riding yaks into the mountains and you know, just talking about how the, you know, America's the great Satan and they're going to blow up the entire world, you'd go, yeah, whatever, right? But when the Israelis talk about it and they have concepts like the Samson option, you have to take them seriously because they're of a mentality that they'll take everybody down. They just really don't care. They view it, it's them against the world. And they will use all the other countries to the extent that they can. But as soon as you pick up on what they're doing and you recognize the behavior of the Israelis, it's always about them. You can't partner with them on anything. You'd be watching your back the entire time. They're not to be trusted in any law. Now, again, to be fair, neither is the American Empire, which is part of the reason why they work well together. These are two hardcore felons committing jobs together, pulling, you know, home invasions together, because they don't get that fear when they crack the back door and come into your house in the middle of the night. They're ready for it. They want it. The American Empire and the Israelis are psychopathic in nature. And so they treat the rest of the world as if, they treat the rest of the world as if they can do whatever they want and you just have to take it. How about the beeper attacks by the Mossad? How about that? The Hezbollah beeper attacks where they blew up. They didn't care. You're going to blow up a guy who's got a beeper. What if the guy with a beeper has got his daughter on his lap? They don't care. What if he's in an airplane? What if he's in a commercial airplane? You blow him up, blow his beeper up and blow up the entire plane. They don't care. They don't care. The Israelis don't care about collateral damage. They don't care about kids getting killed. They don't care about women getting blown up. They don't care about children being sniped in the head in Gaza. They love it. They celebrate it. They talk openly about it. They make t-shirts about it. Have you seen the IDF t-shirt? Go look it up if you think I'm making this up. One shot, two kills. Picture of a pregnant Palestinian woman on the shirt with a circle around it and a line through it. One shot, two kills. That's Israel for you. That's the IDF. That's their mentality. Project Pegasus was an Israeli project, spied on 50,000 journalists and politicians across the United States and Europe. Got busted. They're spying on our people. They're spying on your, if you're in Europe, they're spying on your people too. Your politicians, I should say. You know, in America, if you're in Congress, the Mossad has your phone bugged, has your toilet bugged. You know what I mean? They've got everything on you. You might as well be broadcasting live from Tel Aviv. Okay. Because the electronic warfare is off the charts with them. Okay. The International Criminal Courts, the ICC, labels Netanyahu a war criminal, seeks his arrest. Israel and the United States just scoff at it. They say, well, we're thinking of pulling out of the International Criminal Courts altogether. That's what the US says. We're just about the worst. You know? We're just about the worst. And look, there have to be good people in Israel who oppose this insanity. Just as there are Americans inside the United States who oppose the empire. I'm one of them, right? So where are all of the people like me in Israel that are speaking out against the state? I don't see them enough. Maybe there's reasons for that. Maybe they've made a calculation that you can do that in America, but you can't do that in Israel. Okay. But we need to know that. We need to know that there is a component of the population that is against this, that's anti-war, and that does not stand with their government, much in the same way we don't stand with our government. But it's a small faction. Have you seen the man on the street interviews? Have you seen the ones? Abby Martin did some a couple years ago where they interviewed these people. And I know, ain't man on the street interviews. You can edit that however you want, or you can keep people out. But she spoke with a variety of different people, young women, older men, a broad spectrum of demographics there. Their answers about what should be done to the Palestinian people were terrifying. You know, just a little old lady down the street, what do you think should happen? Oh, we should kill all their children too. God, we got to get rid of it's not enough to kill them. We have to kill all their children. Oh, it has to be done. Oh, you know, it has to be done though. It has to be. You listen to their justifications for it and you go, this is a sick culture. This is a culture that cannot be helped. I'm sorry. I have seen some of the people in Israel talking about their belief system towards the Palestinians. And it's impossible to be the good guys when you think that way. So, but look, the reprehensible behavior by many of the Israelis, you know, that aren't in that small segment that don't want this, you know, they must be called out because it is the reason why the world will never trust these people again. The world is now starting to become vocal about their feelings on Israel. They lost the PR battle a long time ago. October 7th was a catastrophe for them. But I have questions. You know, I have questions for the people of Israel. Much in the same way people in the Middle East, I'm sure, would have questions about me, about my government. Have a seat. Talk to me. How do you justify the behavior of the United States going into all these countries in the Middle East and remaking them? I don't. I can't justify it. I will not. But listening to the Israelis justify the murdering of Palestinian children is crazy. So it's led me to have some questions, right? And I need answers to this. because these are questions that everybody should be asking themselves about the state of Israel. Why does Israel protect pedophiles? Why is that? They do. This isn't speculation, and I'm not making some sort of derogatory comment about them. I'm analyzing what is Israeli policy. They protect pedophiles. If you are a wanted pedophile in the United States and you're Jewish and you can get yourself to Israel, they won't turn you over to the Americans. You know, even our closest ally in the world, Israel, they won't play ball. Why is that? Why is that? Are you guys a nation of pedophiles? You can't be, right? Please tell me you're not. Please tell me you're not all pedophiles. Because your country has made a decision that that's okay. I've watched the videos of the circumcisions. I've watched the rabbis sucking on baby dicks. Okay? This is a disturbing culture. This is a broken system. And it would be one thing if this group of people were minding their own business in the Middle East and running their system the way they choose and destroying their children and all that. But unfortunately, this mentality is being exported intentionally to the United States. So when you see the drag shows and when you see the My Two Mommies and the He Hims and all that stuff, and you dig back into the origins of who is putting this out, guess where it's coming from? It's a lot of Bergs and Steins, okay? It's Jewish. It's a Jewish conspiracy. Take all the time you want. Look into it. Look who's financing it. Pritzkers, all these people. What is there doing early life history on all these people that are pushing the trans agenda? Where's it coming from? So it's not something that we can just say, oh, that's Israeli culture. They protect pedophiles and suck on baby dicks and all that stuff. But that's them there. Don't worry about them. It doesn't affect you here. Yeah, it does. It is affecting us now. And we see the fingerprints that are all over it. It's coming from Tel Aviv. Okay. Why does the Talmud, you know, your holy book, you've got some books there. Why does the Talmud say that Jesus is boiling in excrement? And that the goy, the non-Jews, can be raped, robbed, and murdered. Why does it say that? How am I supposed to have a relationship with you people when you think that you can rape, rob, and murder me without repercussions because your imaginary man in the sky told you it was fine and wrote a book about it? And in that book, it says that Jesus is boiling in shit. Now, I'm not a Christian. I'm sure Christians would be very upset with that. You know, the ones that weren't brainwashed into thinking that Christian Zionism was actually benefiting them. The ones that actually got their heads completely out of their asses and look around and saw what was happening. If you're Christian and your Jewish friends are reading the Talmud and believing that, you should have some questions for them about what they think of Jesus Christ. And then the follow-up question is, okay, Jesus Christ, 2,000 years ago, figure that we're not going to run it. How do you feel about me? Just how do you feel about me being a goy? Do you think it's okay that you can lie to me? You know, it makes it very tough for me to think of getting into business with a group of people in any way, shape, or form who think that it's okay that they can lie and steal and cheat from me and do all this stuff because their God said it was fine. Am I supposed to not... You know, I might have my lawyers draw up a very special contract on that one, you know, just to be sure. Why are Brooklyn Jews going to Israel to squat on land that belongs to the Palestinians? Why is that happening? I understand, I don't agree with it, but I understand why the Israeli Jews who are living there are taking Palestinian land. But why are the Jews coming from Brooklyn? What, and since we're on the topic of Brooklyn, why are there tunnels in Brooklyn? What's going on in the tunnels? You guys have a lot of explaining to do. What's happening in Crown Heights with the Chabad Lubavitch organization that's there. If you want to know who's running things, when you go, oh, you see Donald Trump and you see Netanyahu and you see Putin and you see Zelensky and oh, is everybody, Trump's playing 4D chess? No. They're all controlled by Chabad Lubavitch, the black hat guys. You know what I'm talking about. You'll see them. The beards, the hats. You can go look up the pictures in the Oval Office, the White House of, oh, I don't know, the last 40 years. And there will always be a picture of a president surrounded by like 15 of these guys. They're all wearing the same costumes and the hats and the beards. And they all have that look to them, right? They're all keeping an eye on that president. Why are genealogy tests illegal in Israel? Why is that? Because they are. Why? Is it because if the Israelis started testing their own genealogy, they'd find out that they're Khazarians, that they're from Eastern Europe, and that they don't have an ancestral claim to that they're not Semites? Everybody is, you know, God forbid you criticize Jews, you're an anti-Semite. Well, here's the question: they're not Semites. How can people be anti-Semitic when the Jews that you're speaking of are Ashkenazis from Eastern Europe, when they're not straight up from Poland, like Netanyahu? So they made the test illegal. You can't do that in Israel because it would blow a cover. It would blow the hole in their cover story. Well, we have an ancestral claim to this land. We're all from here. We've been oppressed and everybody's okay. Well, let's do the genealogy. Nope. Can't do that. Why is that? I wonder. Isn't that interesting? Why does the global organ harvesting industry run through Israel? Why? Is it because it's a lawless country? Why did Israel shoot up the USS Liberty back in 1967? And how big of a Zionist was LBJ? The answer, one of the biggest. You know, because the USS Liberty was an American ship that was strafed by Israeli aircraft for hours. Plenty of people died. They tried to sink the ship. LBJ is on a hot mic saying, I want that ship at the bottom of the ocean. He wanted that ship blown up, blamed on the Egyptians, so that the United States could enter a war on behalf of Israel. The ship didn't go down. It blew a big hole in the story. Again, when the general consensus is that Israel is our greatest ally, you're going to have to show me your work on that one, because I'm not going to take your word for it. Because if Israel were our greatest ally, they wouldn't have shot up the USS Liberty and they wouldn't have done 9/11. Oh, and they did 9/11. Let's be crystal clear about that. They weren't the only ones. Okay, there was a neocon segment of the Bush administration. If you take a look at the Bush administration, they're like two-thirds Zionists and one-third Anglo lunatics, Cheney, Rumsfeld, those types of guys out there. Laserkel, I use that as sort of the group that was behind 9/11. Plenty of PNAC Zionists on that list too. Right. So Israel's role in 9/11 has been well known. Well, it's been well known to me for two decades, but for the general public, some of them are just starting to ask some questions. They're going, what are the dancing Israelis? What are the dancing Israelis? Well, the dancing Israelis were a group of guys that were sitting across the river on top of a van with a tripod and a video camera there, who were sent to document the event in their own words when they were brought on Israeli television. They were arrested. They were detained for 2 months until they were released by Zionists inside of Michael Chertoff is Department of Homeland Security, a dual Israeli citizen, Zionist lunatic, who was involved in 9/11, made the decision for the dancing Israelis to go back to be let out. And then they split them up and they went back to Israel. They did an interview. And then after that, they disappeared. We were there to document the events. How were you there to document the events if you didn't know the events were coming? Are you Are you up to date on what the Israeli Mossad's motto is? By way of deception, thou shalt do war. You mean like flying airplanes into buildings and detonating the buildings and then blaming it on Arabs? You mean like that sort of deception? You mean like the sort of deception of shooting up the USS Liberty and then trying to blame that on somebody else? Yeah. Interesting. Yeah. More in my list of what seems to be never-ending questions for the Israelis. Why did you mass vaccinate your entire country? And I mean everybody. Got it there. This is a confusing one for me. Pfizer and BB partnered up on this. I think that BB would just assume kill everybody in Israel too. I don't think he gives a shit about them. I don't think he's worried about pushing an experimental rush to market gene therapy on his citizens. He hates his citizens. 3/4 of the population of Israel are Jews and 1/4 of the population are Arabs. Although I think that ratio is probably changing now that you've got 500,000 dead Palestinians, that throws the ratios off there. Maybe we'll have to re-examine it. But either way, Netanyahu doesn't care. He'll sign his entire country up to be a gigantic experiment for vaccinations. Why did you guys poison Arab water wells back in the 40s and 50s and 60s? Why'd you do that when you first started stealing Palestinian land? How are you the good guys when you're doing shit like that? This is the, you know, measles-filled blanket story that the Americans have. This is Israel's version of that. Poisoning the water wells to kill. I mean, just terrible, unscrupulous behavior by psychopaths. Was that beeper attack necessary? Why does why did the Israelis, this happened recently. This happened like a couple of weeks ago. Why did you guys call Iranian generals on the phone and tell them to make videos denouncing the current regime, or you were going to murder their wives and children? That's what the Israelis told the Iranian generals. This was when they were supposed to be in this like ceasefire that lasted, I don't know, hours. Why do you, the Israelis, put bombs in the food canisters in Gaza? Why do you make bombs that look exactly like children's candy containers and leave them, scatter them around throughout the ruins of Gaza? Is it because you want children to open those candy containers and blow themselves up? Or is it, do you want a starving woman in Gaza to find that food container and thinking it's food, open it up and blow herself up with her kids? Is that what you want? The answer is yes. Yeah, the answer is yes. That's exactly what they want. That's the reason why they built the bombs to look like the fucking food, because they want that to happen. They want children to go find that. They want it to look like a toy. They want the kids to open it up and they want them to die. Where did 400,000 Palestinians vanish to? 200,000 of them are children. The reports just came out. They're just gone. Are they dead? Are they trafficked? Are you cutting out their organs and harvesting? Israel is the largest organ trafficking hub in the world. Maybe Ukraine was in the running for that, but not as much anymore. What'd you do with all the kids, man? What'd you do with 200,000 kids? You could fill the Rose Bowl up twice with that amount of children. A follow-up question for my Israeli friends out there. Did you know that Hamas was created by Israel? Did you know that? This October 7th is just like 9/11. The terrorists from Hamas came in and overran our security systems on hang gliders, and they murdered everybody, and they're so evil. We've got to stop Hamas. You created Hamas. Oh no, we didn't. No, that's bullshit. That's conspiracy theory. Oh no, 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 no. No, it ain't. Early 80s, Hamas was created by Israel to be a counterweight to the Palestinian Liberation Organization. You would know them as the PLO. You would recognize the leader of the PLO, Yasser Arafat. Remember when Yasser Arafat was a huge fucking problem for everybody? Well, what the Israelis did is they said, well, we'll splinter the group. We'll splinter the Palestinians into two camps, maybe more, but at least two camps. Well, they've obviously got the PLO, which is a big problem. We'll start a new group. We'll finance it. Well, we'll create it. We'll have the UAE finance it. And then what we'll do is this group will be called Hamas, and then it'll be, you know, it'll be controlled opposition. And the PLO, you don't hear anything about them anymore. They're gone. But you do hear about Hamas. And Hamas is the boogeyman that's coming to get Israel, and they're definitely going to kill him. They're going to murder everybody. The problem is that Hamas is Israel. Much in the same way that ISIS is the United States. Not the people, necessarily. Not the individuals there. But it's created and financed and controlled and printed on demand whenever you need it. When you need a foreign army, you go to Al-Qaeda. Al-Qaeda, the database. And you go through there and you find your armies on demand. And you create them and you finance them and you put them in a situation and make them start fighting against the people that you want them to fight against. Not, that's no different in with Israel and Palestine and the group known as Hamas. So before anybody talks to me about how Hamas is such a dangerous terrorist organization coming to kill all the Israelis, you need to know that Hamas doesn't rip a loud fart unless Israel says it's okay. Okay. So in following that line of thought, October 7th was made to happen, much in the same way that 9/11 was made to happen. You can sit around waiting for your enemy to do something to you, to give you the justification to go in there and slaughter them, which is what you want to do. Or you can make it happen. You can make it happen and make it look like it was done by the other side, and then go to your media and go to your general public and say, we were attacked. We're the victims. We need the right to defend ourselves. Israel has a right to defend itself. Israel orchestrated October 7th to give them the justification to, quote, have the right to defend themselves. And what did they do in defending themselves? They ordered the Hannibal Directive. Are you familiar with what the Hannibal Directive is? You ever seen The Running Man? You remember The Running Man, like in the 80s, the Arnold Schwarzenegger movie, when he gets caught, he gets busted, and he's a commander in the army or something, he's flying helicopters, and he murders a bunch of people in the helicopter, and it's all on video, right? They've got the footage coming in from his chopper, and he's saying, you know, like, we'll just mow him down, like, let's get him, and just shows all these people getting murdered, and they said, oh my God, he's terrible, we have to arrest Arnold Schwarzenegger's character and put him in this crazy Running Man event. But in the end, what they found was that all that footage had been edited and that he wasn't murdering all these people with his helicopter, that was being made to appear that way. Well, on October 7th, when the helicopters came in, they were operating under the Hannibal Directive. And the Hannibal Directive was to do to the people what Arnold Schwarzenegger in The Running Man did in the movie, which is open fire and murder everybody. Arabs, Jews, whoever. Children, kids hanging out at the music festival, the Nova Music Festival, light them up. They got the green light to light them all up. So for those of you Israelis who lost family members in the October 7th, you have to take that up with your own government, because they were the people that murdered them. Just so you know. Just so that we're talking about what actually happened here. Not some horseshit version of events that the mainstream media wants you to believe. But this is what actually happened. So The Israeli propaganda is known as Hasbara. It's lost its power after 10/7. People started to ask questions, and the answers that they got were not what they were expecting, and it's led them to have additional concerns about the behavior of the Israeli government towards its own people. We know what they'll do to the Palestinians, but did you know that they're just as bloodthirsty against their own people? They simply do not care how many eggs they have to break to make this omelet of theirs. In fact, they love breaking eggs. They love it. It's cultural. It's hard to reason with a nation that is guided by superstitions and psychosis. It's tough to reason with them. Let's wrap up with this. Let's wrap up with what I said. I would tell you what the Greater Israel Project is. First of all, there's nothing great about any of it. It's just war. It's just the sales pitch for expansion of their territory and war. What they want in this is they want to take over many of their enemies. Many of their neighbors. And they may not even be classified as enemies. They will be. But at least in this particular case, they want part of Egypt. They want the Sinai Peninsula part of Egypt. You can grab a map and take a look at what that is. But that would give them control over the Suez Canal, which would be a real problem. They want all of Lebanon. They want all of Jordan. And they want all of Kuwait. If you look at the map, all of those countries are completely captured by that. They want half of Saudi Arabia, and they want half of Iraq, like the, western half of it. They want most of Syria, and they want a very small part of Turkey. Okay. This would give them access to the Persian Gulf through Kuwait. Kuwait is up at that top northwestern part of the Persian Gulf. But if they overtook Kuwait, they would obviously have the oil. And in the top half of Saudi Arabia, they'd have the oil. But they would also have an outlet to get it to the Persian Gulf and get it to where it needs to be. That is, provided that the Strait of Hormuz is still open by the Iranians. And it would be, it would be an issue. By the way, when it comes to the Iranians shutting down the Strait of Hormuz, and we've heard that talked about before, I would not put it out of the Americans' possibility to shut down the Strait of Hormuz themselves and blame it on Iran. You know, mine the floor, you know, the ocean floor, and do all the things that they've got there. I wouldn't put it past them. So we'll see. We'll see how that goes. But if the Greater Israel Project were achieved, and this land was consumed by Israel, and we lived in a world, in a post-Greater Israel universe, then what this would do is this would give them access to the Persian Gulf through Kuwait. It would, they would have almost the entire eastern side of the Mediterranean, and the oil that's offshore there as well. They would have the ability to build that pipeline that they've talked about that's been on the drawing boards for Genie Energy, which is Cheney and Rumsfeld and all those guys partnering with the Zionists to build a pipeline that runs through Syria runs through, I think it kind of branches off it. Part of it runs through Israel and Gaza, you know, out to the ocean that way. Well, that'd be a Suez Canal replacement that could be made that way. And then all the oil pipelines that they have plans on. And there, you can look them up. I mean, this isn't me talking about them. You can go look up Genie Energy and look at what they have planned for it. And you go, oh, well, this will never work because all these countries are in the way. You'd never get these countries to agree. Oh, you're right. You wouldn't. But what if we destroyed the other countries and then it was all Israel? Then we could do whatever we want, right? Well, yeah, I guess you could. So this would be oil, gas, and pipelines. And by the way, Greater Israel Project would butt up right to Iran, right on their doorstep. I'll tell you, I think ambition, arrogance, mental illness, and greed will ultimately sink Israel. Any country advertising the Samson option is a rogue state and a very large danger to the world. Be aware of this and plan accordingly. Hey, if you like this episode, you can take the additional step right now of sharing it with your friends and family. If you want to connect with me, macroaggressions.io is the place to do that. Please bookmark activistpost.com, naturalblaze.com. Thanks, everybody. I'll talk to you again soon.
To modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.org.
Leagues Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning Leagues Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. Leagues Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.org.